Welcome to the ABM Conversations Podcast, the number one podcast for B2B marketers wanting to explore timeless account-based marketing strategies to drive revenue, customer engagement, retention, and everything that makes sense to both marketers and sales folks. No more fluff. No more vanity metrics. Live from India, made for the world.
Hello and welcome to another brand new episode of the ABM Conversations podcast. And this is your host, Yag. In today's episode, we are going to discuss how to effectively use OKRs to drive better marketing outcomes. And to share his experience and insights on this topic, today we have with us Jeremy Epstein. Jeremy is the Chief Marketing Officer at GDM Hub, which is one of the hegemons in the world of OKRs, used by more than 800 organizations across 75 countries, including CNN, Red Hat, Adobe, IKEA, etc. He has more than 20 years of experience in marketing enterprise technology solutions across Microsoft, Sprinklr, and has published several books and articles. And if you guys have already heard of Jeremy, then you probably know that he is one of the leading authorities on blockchain and crypto economics, alongside Pomp and people like Nawal. So Jeremy, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, Yag. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Absolutely. It's such a pleasure having you today. And by the way, many congrats to you on GDM Hub having 3x growth amidst all the drama in 2020, and now for raising this $30 million in Series B.
Thank you. It's obviously been a crazy year for the whole planet, so we're happy that we were able to stay focused on our objectives and key results.
For sure. Right, Jeremy, let's jump right in. You know, you have been the founder of Never Stop Marketing, and your passion for all things crypto is very well established too. And then you jumped into the OKR world, a concept that is probably around since Andy Grove of Intel and then popularized by Google and the likes. And since 2015, you know, I've also seen the rise of SaaS-based OKR tools like GDM Hub, and most recent one that I know of is Ally. So let's start with this. What are OKRs and what makes it so fascinating?
Sure. So OKRs are a goal system. It stands for objectives and key results. And it's a very simple formula. It's, I will achieve this objective as measured by this set of key results. So the classic example is, I will get in better shape. Well, that's great. But what does that mean? Because it could mean I'm going to have lower blood pressure, less weight, run a marathon. So the key results are the measurements that are assigned to helping everyone understand what achievement of the objective means. And it's really just a way to help you get clarity around what you want to accomplish, how you're going to get them done. And it just gives you a very, very effective way of helping that clarity disseminate across the organization. If people are not familiar with it, the book that I tell people to read is Measure What Matters by John Doerr, D-O-E-R-R. It's the Bible of the OKR industry. And you're right, this has been around since Andy Grove invented it back in the 70s, and it has its legacy all the way back in Peter Drucker's work. So this has a solid foundation. And to me, it will be the predominant goal system for the knowledge economy, and the majority of organizations will be using OKRs by the end of this decade.
Right. And, you know, back in 2014, I used to head the global marketing for a Norwegian company called Corporator, which was into enterprise performance management. And the guys were big on balance scorecard, GRC, and those kind of things. And then when I heard you talk about OKRs, what I really loved, or what I read about, was it's more about being focused on outcomes than on effort or any output for that matter. Right. So how are OKRs different from those methodologies? Like, what are the key ingredients of an OKR? Maybe take us through a marketing example of how it cascades within a company.
Sure, I'd be happy to. OKRs are really sort of an evolution of balanced scorecard, and they can definitely be used in conjunction. So there are, of course, some similarities in terms of how do we mobilize change in an organization through executive leadership. How do we make strategy a continual process and make strategy everyone's job? How do we align organization to the strategy and translate that strategy into operational terms? And of course, similarities in terms of the causes of failures, which you know, might be the senior management lacks commitment or too few people involved, or the scorecard hasn't been disseminated, or it just takes a long time, or it's just a one-off thing that you do once a year. So those are some of the similarities, but there are probably five or six key differences between objectives and key results and balanced scorecards. Difference number one is really the time horizon for goal setting, whereas balanced scorecard, and you know, I used to sell these solutions back when I worked at Microsoft in the early 2000s, they're really intended to be set and reviewed on that annual basis with no mandated check-ins, but OKRs are really have multiple time horizons. You have annual, semi-annual, quarter, and monthly OKRs, and check-ins are in a critical part of the process. So it's just sort of that rhythm, that habit. I sometimes will refer to OKRs as like a daily meditation for your business. Speaking of which, that comes back to focus. Balanced scorecard is amazing, and it focuses on a holistic approach, you know, with each of the four perspectives that you know well: financial, customer, internal processes, and learning and growth. But OKRs focus instead on the organization and the most important thing for the business in that quarter, in that half year, in that year. So OKRs are not necessarily required in each of the four perspectives. It's about deciding what is the most important. The third difference is really that OKRs provide a guiding framework. There's probably one of the leading influencers in the space of OKRs is named Felipe Castro. And he describes OKRs as open source. So they don't need other people to guide the framework. It's sort of an open source software or methodology that people can evolve to or adapt. A fourth one is compensation. You know, Balanced Scorecard recommends that incentive and compensation programs are tied to strategic objectives, but OKR suggests that they shouldn't be, because otherwise you're going to have people who are sandbagging. Fifth one would be emphasis. Balanced Scorecard focuses on accountability, and OKRs actually encourage risk-taking through the use of stretch goals. So that's a really big one. And then the last one is how things are measured and how success is measured. And I think you nailed it in terms of outputs and outcomes. Balanced scorecard is really, the metrics there are often lagging. They've already happened. You're looking through the rearview mirror. But key results are really about leading measures and how we're making progress towards the outcomes that we've set. So, you know, balanced scorecard's phenomenal. And we see a lot of enterprise, a lot of our clients who will take the balanced scorecard or some of the other frameworks out there and use OKRs as sort of a turbocharging effect to extend the value of the way that they're already providing strategic guidance to their organization. Marketing, as you know, comes down to, you know, three primary areas, say awareness, perceptions, and leads. So let's say, for example, let's say we wanted to be the go-to brand in our category, which is something that GTM Hub aspires to be. Some would say that we are, of course, but we try to stay humble, right? So you might say our objective is we want to be the go-to brand for our category in 2021. Fantastic. What does that mean? Well, a key result might be, well, we want to achieve, say, 70% share of voice versus our main direct competitor as calculated about, you know, brand traffic as a total percentage of over total market traffic. So that might be one. A second one might be, hey, if we conduct a brand awareness survey, 60% of respondents recall us top of mind. You know, a third one might be, if we have 30,000 organic visitors from industry-related keywords, that's a pretty good indication we're the go-to brand category. And maybe a fourth one might be, you know, let's reduce our bounce rate from 65% to 45%. As a rule of thumb, you don't want to have more than four or five key results. But what that does is it gives you, and more importantly, the entire marketing organization, uber clarity about what is the single most important thing that the CMO thinks we need to accomplish this year. And then everybody else can build off of that and say, okay, well, how can I contribute to one of these key results? So that might be one way that a CMO leader could say, here's how we're gonna, you know, define awareness or perception in our category. And these are the results that will determine whether, in fact, we're successful by the end of the year or not.
Right, right. That makes a lot of sense. And I'm sure, like, you've had customers that were already into OKRs for a long time, but, you know, before they took up GDM Hub, but maybe they were using spreadsheets and then they decided to adopt OKR on a much larger scale. And then it made sense for them to adopt a software like yours. And then there's the other set who are totally net new to OKRs. So give me your thoughts on this. Like, what's the right stage for a company to start adopting an OKR model? Maybe tell me a little bit about how adoption begins at the company. Is it always top-down starting from the C-suite?
Phenomenal questions. We see all of those. And one of the sad truisms of OKRs is that 72% of first-time implementations around OKRs fail. And that has nothing to do with the software. It has to do with the right level of commitment and the right level of, I want to say humility, even though that's really the wrong word, the right level of recognition that OKRs are not something you should be able to do alone. It's not only okay, it's preferable to have a coach. So the first thing when you're starting out on your OKR journey, or whether you're starting out again on your OKR journey, is to recognize it's going to take a while. It's going to take 3, 6, 9 months to really to build this new muscle. So that's one thing we've seen. The second thing is, outside of one or two, if you're above one or two people in your organization, there's no way you'll be able to do it without software. You just can't do it in Excel or a whiteboard or a PowerPoint. That's just naive. So I think you want to sort of keep that in mind. And I think, you know, the third thing is, when is the right time? I would argue it's not thinking about the right stage. It's asking yourself, what's going wrong? Are we having a difficult time anticipating disruption to our business? Are we having a difficult time realigning our strategy? Are we having a difficult time adapting execution? I mean, you know, we've all been through this crazy vortex of the last year, and it's exposed for so many of our clients and for so many of our new clients, exposed for them some of the challenges, and it made them realize, wow, like, we're not able to move as quickly and nimbly as we can. We need a system, and the system we have to have is OKRs, and it can't be done something that's sort of manual process. So if you're not able to, say, quickly shift to meet emerging market demands, or if you're siloed and your work is repetitive and redundant, or you have conflicting initiatives happening across the business, or if measurement's really difficult because changes are, you don't know if things are actually making an impact or not, or another one is you have high employee turnover, like, these are like the symptoms that you're suffering from some of these underlying problems that OKRs are designed to help. I'm personally of the belief that there's, you know, OKRs are pretty much right for any company at any stage if they recognize, wait a second, how can we put this in place now so that we're going to be able to address these things later on as they come, so that we're well prepared for that inevitable moments where we're going to have to anticipate disruption, realign our strategy, or adapt our execution.
Right, right. Let's dive into this a little deeper, you know, maybe with a very practical example. Majority of our listeners here are, you know, B2B marketers and sales folks with about 5 to 8 years of experience in SaaS companies. You gave this example a little bit before, but let's dive deeper. Mm-hmm. And let's say that, you know, as you said, the goal or objective for this company is to make sure that they are the go-to brand for their category. And what would be the exact 3 or 4 key results that you would typically set up? And, you know, from there, like, what are the results? Like, how do you measure those results? And what are the things that you adjust on the go?
Right. So great questions, of course. You know, I think when we outline some of the potential key results, I mean, that's really up to you to decide how you want to define success. So, like I said, you might be share of voice, it might be brand awareness survey, it might be organic visitors. So I think the key thing is, you don't want to have to abandon the systems that you already have in place. I mean, I'll do a little pitch here and say that we integrate with, you know, over 160 different business systems. And that's specifically because we're not telling you to rip and replace stuff. What we're saying is, your data is sitting out there. What you need is a way to stitch together the data. So, for example, one of my personal key results has to do with cost per marketing qualified lead. Well, the number of marketing qualified leads is sitting in HubSpot. The cost of those leads is sitting in our finance system. I could spend an hour or two all the time, sort of every week, stitching that together. Instead, I just have those two systems synced and I'm able to look at it. I can't, you know, nobody can tell you what your OKRs could be. What's important is to say, how do I use the systems that I already use? How can I get the data that's going to accurately reflect whether, in fact, I've achieved my objective? And how do I make sure I've set the right objective? That's one of the most difficult parts. I mean, the beauty of OKRs is they're really simple to understand. I mean, I can explain it to my seventh grader. She totally gets it. The hard part, and this is really the secret, is OKRs are as much about what you don't do as what you do do. And so understanding that once you commit to OKRs, like, that's what you're going to do. Can you change them? Sure. Things happen, of course. But as a rule of thumb, you don't want to do that. So basically what you do as the leader is say, these are the ones that I'm looking at. And then you turn to your team and say, all right, I've set these OKRs. Now, based on what you understand my OKRs to be, which are written clear as day. What is it that you think you can contribute to this? Now let's collaboratively. I mean, OKR, I don't go to my team and tell them what their OKRs are. They don't come to me and say, here are my OKRs. They come to me and they say, here's what I'm thinking. And then we have a collaborative discussion based on their strengths, what our systems have, what our initiatives are, what I feel is important. And then we have this beautiful alignment that we all know, okay, I know what everybody on the team is doing. And more importantly, everybody on the team knows what everybody's doing, so that we have this, you know, not just focus, but we have the transparency that allows us to understand where are things working. And because we all run this off, we run this all off of our platform, we can see in real time where the issues are as they're happening. So we can say, instead of saying, oh, Yag, you're not doing your job, it's, oh, Yag, I see you're running into a little bit of trouble there. How can I help you? And we're all pushing in the same direction. And so it actually does a huge lift for morale. So I think it's the leader's job is to set that top level OKR, and then to help coach the rest of the team, not in a cascading sense. This is not about like telling people and you just pick mine. It's what activity can you do? So for example, it might be, okay, if you want to drive organic traffic, one of my team members will say, you know what, I'm going to just triple down on our blog. I'm going to make sure that our blog has fresh content, that we have industry thought leaders, you know, participating, and we're going to triple the amount of visitors we get to our blog, and we're going to amplify it through social, and we're going to improve our SEO ranking. And if we do those things, that will drive your top level key result of organic visitors from industry related keywords. So it's sort of very collaborative goal management, goal setting methodology. Does that make sense?
Absolutely, it does. And you know what makes me so happy hearing all of this is that I've not seen many organizations that do this in a really collaborative manner. Usually the goals come top down. So I'm so happy that you said you do it in a collaborative way.
You have to. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me also ask you this. Like, how many objectives can a company typically have? You know, assuming, as you said, like, you know, each objective may have about 3 to 4 key results. But like, how many objectives is way too much and impractical? Like, do you think there is a sweet spot?
A rule of thumb with OKRs is less is more. You know, like I said, it's not about what you can do, it's about what you must do and what you won't do. So you might, as a company, set 3, possibly 4. Say you're, let's say, going back to our balanced scorecard conversation, you might pick one OKR for each of the financial, customer, you know, learning and growth, internal processes perspectives. But once you're at 4 OKRs, like, that's pretty much enough, because it's like saying we're focusing on 4 things, and that's already a lot. So typically we'll say 3 is the most you can handle. But in our company, our rule is we have 3 at the top, absolute top level as a company, but each person only has 1. And then the key results, your sweet spot is you want to have at least 3, no more than 5. So somewhere in the 3 to 5 range, 1 objective, 2 objectives if you're really aggressive, 3 if you're really got this down, and 3 to 5 key results. Once you do more than that, you know, you're going to be spreading yourself pretty thin. So for example, my Q1 is I have 1 objective and 4 key results, and that's it.
Wow, that makes sense. And it's like all the more clear as to what you want to go out and accomplish. Makes sense. So though OKR, you know, at the outset, it seems like a relatively simpler methodology and practical compared to other strategy execution models, I still think that it's a change that an organization needs to embrace collectively, you know, overall and execute. So even when a company is bought into this OKR model, like, what are the typical adoption gaps that you see at the execution level?
Yeah, you know, it's that's super important. And I get fired up about OKRs, as you can probably hear. I mean, it's
absolutely
my favorite topic. I probably should drink more decaf, but this comes down to culture. And, you know, the people who've been in the OKR business, as it were, for years, and it's like you said, it's, this thing goes all the way back to the 70s. And, you know, Google's the one who made it kind of famous well known in the early 2000s, but it's really started to pick up steam only in the last couple of years. And now we're seeing it jump from technology companies to more mainstream companies. But this really comes down to culture. The first thing is people have to understand that OKRs are responsible for driving the top level, you know, objective. Like, that's what it's for. It has to be meaningful. If it's not personally meaningful, and this is why we talk about having clarity of mission, how we have clarity of vision, You know, we have so much lip service about mission and vision, but if you're not aligning your objective to the corporate mission in a meaningful way, people aren't going to care. They're not going to be engaged, and it's going to feel artificial. You'll be having basically organizational hypocrisy, and nobody wants to work in that environment. Number two, so that's a big mistake, is, you know, not thinking about how do we align this with really what we say our reason for being is. So this gets down to sort of purpose companies, which I think a lot of people, that resonates with them, number one. Number two, the key results have to be challenging, but not impossible. Because if they're just way out there, you're going to end up with a whole bunch of people who are demotivated because they just feel like, what's the point? I'm never going to make it anyway. So something that's helpful is for leaders and managers to shape the direction or define the problems to solve, and then just leave it up to teams to help shape the key result definition, like I was saying before. The third thing, excuse me, is that nothing happens when goals are achieved or not achieved. So for example, we just recently, I was talking to someone who said that at the end of the OKR cycle, their teams would basically vote on which team delivered the most value to their customers. You know, and the company pays something like $1,000 per person to that team so they could organize a team building event. And, you know, sometimes the managers had to remind the teams to take advantage of the prize, and the teams cared more about the respect of their colleagues than they did about the money. So I think you have to sort of avoid the trap of not aligning to your core vision and mission. Avoid the trap of setting really impossible goals, and avoid the trap of not using OKRs to both not only look forward, but to look back and say, look, we set these very aggressive goals and we did it. We should celebrate about that. Otherwise, you know, you're going to be stuck. You want to make sure that leadership buys in. You want to make sure that people are clear about why are we doing this? And you want that this will give people the focus, and you want to spend the time to educate them and understand this is about accountability and transparency. This is not about being perfect the first time. It's about understanding that things will go wrong, that people will come short. But in a knowledge economy, which we've just hyperspaced into over the last, you know, year, basically, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to fail. It's what did you learn from that process? And OKRs give you the most powerful framework on the planet.
Right, right. I agree. And then there's also the other side, you know, even if the adoption is quite decent and there are times when things don't really go the way it is expected. And, you know, as we discussed before, I wouldn't necessarily blame the model per se. But let me ask you this, like, why do OKRs fail at times? Like, what are some of the common mistakes that you see in OKR implementations?
Yeah, you asked this question before and I got carried away and didn't answer it. So yeah. I'm going to come back and answer it. See, I'm the worst guest you've ever had for that reason. So
I love the passion that you have on this topic and just go with it.
I got to dial it back, you know. Okay. So look, you asked me before, do OKRs always start at the top? Right. And the answer is no. But if they don't have buy-in from the top, they probably will fail. You know, there are plenty of tools and software that can come in at the middle level. OKR, like, people will sometimes call us an OKR tool, and I'll say, no, we're not an OKR tool. You know, we're just software to help you implement the OKR methodology. We're software to help you orchestrate your business across teams, functions, and divisions. So what you'll typically see in the successful organizations is there's a C-level executive who basically says, we need to go down the OKR route. And there's an implementer, an OKR champion who will do it. If you don't have senior leadership buy-in, that's going to be a big problem. If you haven't communicated to other people, why are we changing the way that we measure things from an output-minded organization to an outcome-minded organization? People aren't going to understand, because this is a new way of doing business, and they will reject it. And they'll just think, oh, I just have more reporting to do or more tasks, and it's overwhelming and it's whatever. And if the organization tries to get too aggressive, you know, by having too many objectives, you're basically saying, well, let's take everything we're already doing and shove it into this OKR framework. That's not what OKRs are for. OKRs are a filter to help you get away everything that's not super critical in that quarter, in that half year, in that year. And then last of all, you know, I would say is, you have to spend the time. This is what I talked about with having the coach and having the training. You have to be able to educate people on what does it take to create a good OKR. You know, we have a design score that we've built into our platform to help people, you know, assess whether, in fact, it's a solid OKR. So you have to be able to educate people, and you have to be able to provide accountability. that people understand, look, I am signing up for this objective and for these key results. I'm making a commitment to the organization. And my commitment is I'm going to do everything I can in this quarter to make that happen. I may not do it, but if it doesn't happen, it's on me. And if it does happen, I'm the guy who gets to celebrate. But either way, it's on me. And so you don't want to have accountability diffused across multiple people. Every single person has an OKR. You can have team OKRs on top of that, but every single person has an OKR. So you can look anywhere in the organization at any time and say, ah, what is Yog doing? What are his OKRs and how's he doing against them? Okay, I understand how he fits in. Let me see how I can help. Or maybe I'm blocking him from being able to achieve it. I think if you don't have those pieces of the puzzle without senior leadership, without effective communication, without a culture that accepts, you know, accountability and learning, and by trying to bite off too much, like, you're going to have a really hard time. And then in that case, you might as well use one of our competitors because you're going to fail anyway.
I love the way you ended that.
Churn with
and,
them.
You know, one of the you know, one of the funniest implementations of OKRs that I've seen in my life is that, you know, 6-7 months, nobody talks about any OKRs, anything. And suddenly when the performance appraisal cycle starts, the HR comes and says that we are implementing an OKR system. You know, yeah. Those kind of things also happen.
Well, that's always an issue because you want to be concerned if like there are scenarios where HR will drive OKRs and it does work, but you have to be very careful not to connect OKRs to performance management. Because if you do, people are going to get very conservative because all of a sudden it starts connecting to their paycheck. And if you haven't talked about your OKRs in 3 or 6 or 9 months, you're not doing OKRs. You just have like a little exercise. So those are good kind of anti-patterns for potentially being on the wrong path. And we've seen that with people who then come to us and we sort of say, look, you know, this is as much a habit. It's not just about the software. It's about the habit, the discipline, the methodology, the daily meditation, if you will, and committing to the focus on what's most important.
Right. I'm really loving this. So we are towards, you know, that section of our podcast, which we call it more like a game show. It's called the rapid fire section.
Nice.
Yeah, the idea of rapid fire is to ask you pointed questions. Maybe try my best to put you on the spot. I'm just kidding. But
I love it.
So yeah, I'm going to ask you pointed questions and you can just go with the flow, whatever comes to your mind. So are you ready?
It sounds like I really don't have a choice. So
all right. So here's question number one. You know, I read one of your recent articles where you wrote, organizations don't create value, only customers do. And talking of value, you said it may be semantics for some, but not for me. So can you explain that?
Sure. Because the only way that value gets created is when somebody decides to transfer something of value to them, to you. So we typically use money for that, but it could be anything else. Until that actual moment happens, where I give you $100 or 50,000 rupees or whatever it is, value hasn't officially been created. That moment of the transaction is the consummation that creates value. Before that, you have a theory that you're about to create value. But until somebody willingly gives you something they value, you haven't created it. That's my theory.
Right. I really love this. All right. So here's question number two. Does an organization's culture play a critical role in the success or failure of an OKR? Yes or no, and why?
Oh, 100% yes. 100% yes. And the reason why is because this is a knowledge economy organization, which everybody is going to be if they aren't already, has to understand that knowledge workers are humans, and humans make mistakes. And by definition, the work that they're doing isn't prescribed. It's not about turning widgets on an assembly line. So you have to have a culture that says, look, I need to give you the freedom, the flexibility to try new things, and the safety to know that if you fail, it doesn't mean you're done. So there are plenty of organizations that will punish people for taking risks, and that's just the wrong way to do it. So yes, 100% culture matters. And if you have a culture that is about get a gotcha or not supporting people who really go out and, you know, try new things, because by definition, that's what you're paying for. That's what knowledge workers are supposed to do. If we already knew how to do it, you could just give it to the AI and you'd be done.
Right, totally with you on this. All right, so here's question number three. What is that one objective that you're working on this quarter?
Oh, man, you're going to make me open the kimono a little bit, eh?
Right.
Yeah, my objective is very simple. I want to make GTM Hub the premier brand in our space.
Wow, that's very precise. I love it. I love it. It's very pointed, very focused. And just like you explained the concept, love it. All right. So in question number four, you know, since you are so much into crypto and blockchain, mm-hmm. I cannot not ask you a question on that line. So here's what I'm going to ask you. What, according to you, is the biggest resistance to global adoption for cryptocurrency?
The biggest resistance right now is just time. I mean, it's the usability. This is, you know, we're in internet circa 1995, 96, maybe. You know, you have your dial-up modem, and it's probably even earlier than that. So just the usability for the on, the off ramps. The technology immature, so it's just time. I mean, it's inevitable, but the usability and some of the scalability, there are a lot of issues. So I guess I'm going to stick with my original time answer. You just have to be patient. But that's why I tell people get in now, because by the time it hits mainstream, everyone else will have figured it out.
All right. So here's the last and final rapid fire question. If you had to quit one marketing channel from this moment, what would you choose?
Oh, man, I'm going to get in trouble for this one. But I would say that if I had to quit one marketing channel, my goal is to never have to pay for marketing spend, never have paid spend. I believe that you can create a marketing engine that's so powerful that it's driven by word of mouth, social, and all the unpaid. Like, that's my ultimate goal. So I guess any paid media channel, but let's just say Google. I would love to stop paying Google. How's that? I'm going to get in so much trouble right now. They're going to hate me. You just ended my career, Yogg. It's fine. That's a legacy of my crypto days, man. I'm very skeptical of how much data they take. So it's an issue for me.
Right. But, you know, it's also the question was also to get, you know, quick mindset of how you look at things. So, yeah, I love that answer, actually. You know, most of us aspire to do that, but we don't openly say it. But thanks for being very open on that.
Well, Seth Godin is we were talking before the show about our heroes, right? Well, Seth Godin is probably my ultimate marketing hero. And, you know, it's all about being remarkable. So I try to, you know, honor him by doing what I can. And I believe that that's my objective, is be a truly remarkable brand. And the key result would be 100% of our activity comes from unpaid sources. It's maybe a pipe dream, but that's what I shoot for.
Right. And, you know, there was one of this recent articles by Rand Fishkin where he said something is wrong with our advertisement. And it's like it just speaks very specifically to the lines of what he just said.
Yeah,
that's a beautiful read. Maybe you go out and check that. All right. So we are towards the end of our show today. So before I let you go, you know, if there is a parting message that you would like to share with our listeners, what would that be?
I would say if you're not familiar with OKRs as a discipline, go buy John Doerr's book. I usually tell people if you're not satisfied by page 15, I'll personally refund the cost of the book. I'm not sure I'm going to make that offer given how big your audience is, but definitely that's number one. And I think if you are, recognize that, have self-compassion as you begin to become more familiar with it. It does take a while and it takes practice because it is an entirely new mindset. So learn about it, have self-compassion. But recognize that once you become proficient at it, it will be like a superpower unleashing your productivity and your knowledge capabilities that will help you 10x your organization and yourself. And I wish you the best of luck.
That's amazing. And if the listeners of this podcast, if somebody wants to get in touch with you to discuss further on OKRs, like what is the best place for them to connect with you?
I mean, you can always come to gtmhub.com and, you know, or Twitter, gtmhub, you can get in touch with there. My biggest social media presence is Twitter, and that's JER979. So you can hit me up there. But certainly, or if you find a really good question, Jeremy, JEREMY, @gtmhub.com, feel free to shoot me an email. Any of those will work, and I look forward to hearing from people.
Amazing. And, whatever you shared towards the last, 35 minutes or 36 minutes, it was pure gold. I absolutely love that. So thank you so much for all the valuable nuggets that you shared with me.
Oh, you're very kind. And I'll make sure to quote you when my wife and children tell me how annoying I am. So thank you for that.
It happens in every house.
Sure. I think it does.
Right. And for the listeners of the podcast, that's that from us for this episode. And until we connect with you the next time, this is Bai from EYAG. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the ABM Conversations podcast. Make sure you subscribe and share your comments with us. We're constantly looking for your feedback, thoughts, and suggestions to make the show more relevant to you.